I want to make sure that my voice sounds good, so I'm going to do a couple of vocal exercises, okay?
Okay.
Abraham Lincoln. Abraham Lincoln.
Unique, wow, could you make it less New American?
York. Unique New York.
Holy.
Ulysses Grant. Ulysses Grant. Okay, we're good.
Why don't you try throwing in some Canadian flavor to those vocal exercises?
Robin Thicke. Robin Thicke.
Say tabernacle.
Tabernacle. This episode, episode 4, Bachelorette, takes place in Montreal. And it is pretty fantastic. There's a lot of really pretty places there. And I remember Benoit describes it. He's essentially saying, you know, it's pretty much Europe. But you don't feel like you are in North America at all. And I agree with him. It's very cool. Old town. I like that a lot. So yeah, it's very exciting. And I'm excited to get into this episode. Kevin W. immediately finds the date card when they arrive at the hotel. Drew strong arms him to announce the date instead. Found that to be a very Drew thing to do.
Oh.
The single date card, Drew announces and says, Chris. And Chris is like, ah. Oh. Yes. Oh my God. Like, you just see the relief on this guy's face because he is, as he said earlier, holding on by a thread. He truly is. There's this long pause and they do a one-on-one interview with Chris. And he's like, finally, I've gotten my chance. I'm very excited to get to know Jasmine a bit better and show her a little bit more about myself. And I'm like, yeah. I was like, Chris, finally, you get some opportunity. And then fucking Drew goes, actually, I'm kidding. It's Mikkel. And then just stares at Chris. He essentially tricks him, then goes, oh, yeah, you got a boner. He does this. Oh, he's such a dick. It just, I want to jump through the screen and strike this man. But yeah. So then it goes to the solo date. Jasmine wakes up Mikkel with coffee in bed. Absolutely.
McCafe, of course.
McCafe for Mikkel. You guys do a street art solo date.
Oh, yeah. We did graffiti.
Which is very cool with a cool French-Canadian couple. So my first question, this is more generally, is it hard to try to act natural while they're filming?
I don't know. You just were used to it. There were people around you all the time. Like, you knew they were there. But the producers would also hang back. They would be watching on monitors and, like, everyone could hear you. You'd be mic'd up and, like, certain people had access to your mic so they'd be able to hear you. Do you want to know something so embarrassing? Oh, my God. I think about this regularly and I've never said it. Oh, my God. Okay, this is so embarrassing.
Did you pee, go to the bathroom with your mic on? You took a Bruce?
Let me, okay.
You dropped some street chocolate?
Okay. I always knew to unplug my mic. Like, all I had to do, it was all attached to me and, like, taped to me, and it was a whole finagled thing. So I would know how to unplug it. I would just literally find the pack in the back wherever it was, and I would just unplug it if everyone pee or was, like, you know, not wanting people to hear me, like, if I was not on camera. But this one time, this was in Winnipeg, I think maybe, oh, God, this is so embarrassing. I went to the bathroom, and, yeah. It was a softer moment, and
what does that mean? Wait, what? What do you mean by a softer moment? Explain what, I don't know what that means. I actually can't insinuate anything from that. I've
you
never
do
heard
know
anyone.
You just want me to say it, okay?
A softer moment. Oh, that's because all you're eating is birdseed and Kind bars.
Listen, so this is so
wait,
bad.
You had so hot lava on audio. You should hit up the producers.
Listen, so
and
no,
be
no,
like,
no,
do you still
no
have
one...
that audio?
Okay, so then I remember, like, realized after the fact, right? And I'm washing my hands and I'm coming out and I'm like, oh my fucking God. I know that this was hooked up. So if people had their little earpiece in, they probably all were looking at each other being like, uh-oh. I just can't imagine that I wasn't a part of some sort of joke while I was gone. And then I came back and no one said anything to me and everyone acted cool. And I was just like, I'm obviously not going to bring this up, but chances are high that someone just heard me poo.
Amazing.
It was not amazing. And you know what? Oh, God, I still think about it. Anyways, what were we talking about? Oh, is it hard to know? Is it hard to ignore the cameras? No. It became quite easy to ignore the cameras, but you definitely got to be mindful of that microphone.
So much screen time that it just disappears after a while. Like on movies, yeah. It's like the camera is right in your face, and you just have to pretend it's not there because it's you know, movie standards are like never look directly down the lens.
Yeah, you and like that, we still cut. Were told not to look at the like we just didn't look at the lens. Like it's not
yeah.
You have the common sense to know that you're not supposed to look at it. You get to know the crew and they're just like there with you all the time. So
okay. The spray painting artists have a quote that's pretty great. I'm just gonna say it. We don't have to talk about it past this, but it's a family that sprays together stays together. Those people have that and skunks.
Yeah.
So I'm just going to leave that there. You wearing street style clothes.
Don't make fun of me. I know. Listen, I know. Okay.
You look like me in high school.
I looked like Jesse Pinkman. The toque was very tight on my very small head. And I remember thinking, this is not flattering, but I'm going to get through it.
What?
Oh, and do you know that I was wearing sunglasses because it was so windy and my eyes would not stop watering? So that's I had hilarious. To put on sunglasses because I was crying the whole time.
Jesus.
I remember that. I don't know why, but my eyes were super sensitive and my eyes couldn't stop watering. My makeup got so messed up.
I wish I was like the head top executive producer. I can make any call while on this show. They, you know, the couple of the other producers be like, hey man, she's crying. Be like, leave it. Leave it on. Let her struggle.
I think she's probably the one. The executive producer is a female. Her name is Claire. And she, I think, was the one who like gave me, like someone lent me their sunglasses because they were
that
like.
That is adorable.
Are you good?
So, I mean, I've asked this before, but you know, do you pick your outfits at all?
No. Everything's so
the
chosen
full
in advance.
Outfit is picked in advance, not piece by piece. Full outfit.
I will say that like I told you guys, well, I don't even know if I said this before, if this was one of our episodes that got
it's
ruined.
It's been lost
but
in the archives.
It's probably been lost. We spent hours trying on outfits, hours and hours and hours, like 8 hours a day for probably like 4 or 5 days is my recollection. And the streetwear outfit was not an outfit that I tried on. I think that was given to us last minute because I'm pretty sure that we were wearing like merch from the couple, the street art couple.
Apologies for the interruption. At this point in the podcast, Cole's headphones died, so we had to take a short break, and we're jumping right back in and completely off subject.
Anyways, I had
Gucci.
To have a pat.
No.
Are you going to say it?
Say it. I don't know how we're going to, because we're just in the middle of a conversation, cuts, and then you're like, I had to have a pap smear. Okay, continue.
I call it a pap test. I know it's called a pap smear, but I also hate that. And I don't like...
like the word smear.
And people sometimes put like a schmear in it. Like, why do they...
a pap schmear. Imagine... Okay, if I owned a bagel shop and it was like... just to see if anyone... I would name one of my schmears pap. I'm like, oh, what flavor is this? It's pap. So that's pap schmear. What kind of bagel do you have? I've got an everything with onion, and it's got some pap schmear on it. Oh, it's got lox. It's got lox, too. It's okay. It's got a little salmon on it, a little some salmon eggs, and a pap schmear.
It's really, like, not... I fucking, like, hate men sometimes because they
what
don't have to go through...
What is a pap smear? I don't
honestly,
actually fucking know.
Really?
Is it
okay.
Just a vaginal all-around test, right?
No. Who's my God, what's everything? Wrong with you? Okay, I don't know.
I just told you I don't know. And then I guess you were like, what's wrong with you? This is why men don't ask questions, because we're scared.
It's a test for cervical cancer. So you go there.
Oh,
you're supposed to go.
I have no idea.
Yeah, so you go usually every year, but it's changed. It used to be every year. Now I think it's every 2 years. But I have to go every 6 months because they found irregular cells recently, and so now they have to like be on top of it. But it's a they basically like go in there and they swab your cervix, which is the, I feel like men don't understand what the hell a cervix is. So it's like, it's basically the entryway to your uterus where the baby would exist, and the baby would come out of there, and that is what dilates when the cervix would dilate.
That's the part that hurts. Well, okay, no, but you have two things that has to go through if you're giving
birth. Yes, but it's the dilation of the cervix that hurts. It's not the vagina. I mean, that rips and stuff, but I don't think you even feel that because it hurts so much coming out of your cervix.
Yeah,
but
it's like,
never had a baby,
like a
so
walk
I can't
in
say.
The park.
But all I can say is that, like,
do you want to have kids?
Yeah, I do, but I can't. I've had to have an IUD inserted in there, and it is not fun, and it made me feel like I was going to die, and so the idea of having to have a child come out of there, just can't. I can't even fathom it. So that's essentially what a pap smear is, okay?
Interesting.
It's important, ladies.
Okay, what's up?
I'm just about to ask you the same question. Where did we end up last time? Because I have absolutely no recollection. I can find it.
Oh, no, I know exactly where we are. We were in the spray paint date. I love it. The whole date is very, very cute. Mikkel's great. He's a little shy and nervous, and he's trying to assert himself
a
little bit.
He used to drive me nuts. So, like, you can't make a person be
you
comfortable
either be,
in that
you
weird
either
situation.
Go from, like, nervous as a kid, and then you just say, fuck it, I'm just done with being nervous. And of course I get nervous,
but I mean, in this situation it's a lot different. Like, the thing is that Mikkel said straight up to me, he's like, I thought I would just be the token brown guy and didn't expect to be here longer than like a couple days. And so
wow,
I know. And so
damn,
he
that sucks for that guy that he even has to think that way.
I know,
it's not of
I
course
know.
His fault at all, but it's like
that's
wild.
I know. And so I don't, and again, like, I don't think he was, I'm pretty sure that it was suggested to him to apply or he was nominated. I don't think that he, like, went out of his way to apply. So he, yeah. And like I said, was supposed to be the bachelor, declined the opportunity. And that's how much he, like, that's how much he was not, you know,
into it.
It was a really traumatizing experience for everyone involved. Especially,
yeah,
like,
of course.
Him and I and Kevin, probably, like, it was a lot. But also, he just wasn't, that wasn't his angle, you know? He wasn't, like, needing to be on television. So, anyway,
which makes me like him more.
I know,
he's
exactly.
Just, he's there to be there. He's like, I'm here, I'm not for all this different stuff. But anyway,
yeah.
The date's going great. My main question is, it seems like either the couple started a spray paint design, or a stencil was drawn, and then you guys filled it in from there.
I drew the rose. You know that I was supposed to go to art school? I'm not
I
saying
I
that,
actually
that was
did
a
not
ma-
know that.
Okay.
Anyway.
I don't do anything like that anymore. But I would say that I have an ability to, not like the fucking rose was a masterpiece, but
anyway,
fine. All right.
You have a quote in there in which you're talking about him kind of being a little bit more assertive on the date, and you just say, I want him to have his way.
Wow. Yikes.
Pretty rough. He takes you to the second location, which I've heard from other women. This is not the thing to do, but you guys go to the second location. Women. And my question is, what do you do between locations? Do you just drive directly there? Because you guys change and stuff. Is it a separate day?
No, it's not a separate day. It would have been later that evening, and we're not allowed to talk off camera or hang out off camera, so there was no opportunity to be alone. This is not because they're trying to hurt our feelings or be awful. It's just because they don't want to capture the development of our relationship off camera, because then they'll have to somehow try to explain that to the audience, which is not going to be easy to do, so they try to keep us separate. So I don't remember specifically what happened. I probably went back to the hotel, and I probably got changed and ready, and later on that evening met at the venue.
It was
Here's
fantastic.
What I definitely liked about this date, too, is that, okay, here's something, Cole, you might not know. You guys, the Bachelor franchise in the U.S. exclusively hires country musicians to be there for you to awkwardly dance in front of while they play live music.
Because they know their audience. The middle of the country is the one who's watching the show the most.
I know. But not entirely. But yes, the majority,
almost
sure.
entirely.
Almost entirely. But it is irritating, okay?
Yep.
I felt so happy that they hired a local Quebec indie rock.
Quebecian
indie rock band for our date. They're awesome. They're actually so good. They're almost like
dream pop. I liked them a lot. They're so good. Super minimal and simple.
I still listen to them.
They're dope. I almost want to look them up. You should send me their link because I really liked their music. And honestly, the acoustics in there, I couldn't tell how it was mixed or whatever, but I was like, 100%. Fuck yeah.
No, it wasn't even mixed. They recorded the acoustics separate. Like they just had it recording, obviously, inside the room. But because it was such a beautiful room, it was insane. It sounded amazing. And the producers and like the director who were sitting there watching that dance and us dancing to that song, they were like, everyone was actually crying tears. It was crazy. It was a very emotional night, but it was a good one.
It's pretty great. I did notice, because you guys do eventually kiss, you go back to the third location within the second location, and there's a tub inside of this castle. And I'm going, wait, hold up real quick.
Random hot tub.
I don't know if anyone, because most of our listeners are mostly women, but ask your boyfriends if they've seen John Wick, because these locations look like they would be a scene in John Wick, because he is constantly in these very Constantinople kind of looking environments, like big castles or cathedrals with frescoes on the wall, and it's kind of dark and moody, and then there's always a tub or a pool inside of these buildings, and there's a shootout scene, like he's stabbing and killing and working his way through these situations. And I was like, that's a John Wick location, I swear it is, because it just looked like it would be. And I hope the John Wick producers listen to this show and go, fuck, we gotta film there. But I noticed that every time you kiss someone, the guy who is scoring the episode puts in this amazing sound effect.
What is it?
So as you kiss, I'll do it with my hand again. You go, and it goes, burning. It's like one of those hanging things, and they go, it's like a pigeon cooing.
You think that Mikkel also got much more romantic music than every other guy? Like, everyone really, think else. About it. Think about it next time that you ever watch Mikkel on screen. Like, he gets the most romantic music.
Oh, he is time. Branded that way. It's pretty fantastic. But I was just, I'm like, oh my God, they play this sound effect, the rainfall sound effect every time.
I definitely don't remember this, but I'm going to have to pay attention and watch again.
Moving on to the second group date, Kevin takes the initiative again and reads the date card that is just mysteriously handed off. And the people that are picked are Sick Kev, Beignet, Andrew Clothing, and David the Musician. I can't remember exactly what it was, because you leave these kind of mystical quotes on the date card.
What was the date? I think I know.
I'll get to it. Okay. And it was like, do you think you can perform? Or something like that. It had something to do with performing. And David hears this and goes, ooh. And the quote from him is, I think we have to perform on this date, which is right up my alley as my main skill. So hopefully I get to perform today. And I said, rough quote from David the Musician? Question mark.
This whole thing. It's all about his YouTube channel and his music.
You guys arrive, and it's Cirque du Soleil. And
oh my God, this was so fun.
And David's complaining pretty much the whole time away from you that I'm on these straps. And it looks like the Olympic sport where they grab the rings and they just have to just hold themselves. That's what I was like, he has to do this.
This is so funny. They all got different, what would you call it? Like different
things that the Cirque du Soleil does.
Yeah, like they all were in different departments. And we were at the actual Cirque du Soleil training center in Montreal, which is obviously where Cirque du Soleil began. I remember my outfit being super stupid which was jeans and a t-shirt. I mean, that's not that big of a deal, but it wasn't very gym-like. And it's because for some reason wardrobe got messed up, and I either didn't have an outfit for this event, or it didn't fit right or something. And so we had to scramble at the last minute to try and find me something to wear. And so I literally swapped clothes with my makeup artist Jess and wore her outfit that she was wearing that day. And that's what I wore the whole day. That was a really cool date though. Like, how neat. I fucked with to that. be at the Cirque du Soleil training center. It's awesome.
Do you get to pick when group dates become solo dates with the winner?
No.
That's wild.
Like I've said before, maybe I could have. I was not very assertive. I just trusted I trusted the producers to make the decision that was best.
Sure.
I wanted. Okay. Like, listen. Here's the thing. I knew that they knew me well, and that they knew the guys better than I knew the guys. So I trusted their opinions, and I still wanted the show to be entertaining. So I also trusted their opinions in terms of like what was going to make a better show.
Sure.
As long as I was still going to have the experience that I needed to have, I didn't really mind in what order it went. Near the end, when things got more serious, of course, I became like a little more.
Sure. As you start to narrow down on guys and stuff.
Yes.
So David immediately gets the hardest task on the group date with these straps. And he's trying really hard. I mean, he's giving it his all. And you have these cute interactions with each guy on the date while they're practicing and trying to figure it out, except for David, because he's just struggling so much. Poor guy. And my bet was for Sick Kev for the group Rose.
He did so good on that. What was it called? Like a pole?
He
something
was pole? Ripping it. Anyway, my bet was Sick Kev for the group Rose. And Benoit Beignet wins.
Benoit grabbed my butt.
Yeah. He ripped your ass so hard and was like, you're coming with me. And he just, and I swear, as he was pulling up, he was gripping your ass harder. And I was, Benoit needs to chill the fuck out.
I know, becoming a little said that, but I mean, aggressive. It was part of his charm. Like, it's hard for me to, I don't know. I found it quite,
the kind of stereotypical romantic European, and they are affectionate and like that, but he would just go and just make out.
He always would suck the best part about Benoit. He was the comedic relief for me, like in what was a very stressful environment. A lot of the time, Benoit like just melted all of that away, and he used to do this thing where he would smell me all the time, and like no shame whatsoever. Like he would just like come up to me and be like, and there's even like isn't there a part in the
In the next scene? I'm gonna get to it.
A lot of people were like, oh, Benoit came on too strong, Benoit. And I was like, dude, okay, yeah. Like, I would, I don't know. It was like part of what made him so funny to me. It was hard to be offended by it because he's just like, I don't know how to explain it.
Anyway.
I just liked it.
Beignet wins, and you guys go into a VIP tent area. Don't like the aesthetic of this tent.
It was a circus tent. There was like a bird and a cage and like all this stuff.
There's like aviary flu floating around. Anyway, the cuddling spooning made me so uncomfortable I had to pause and drink some water. You seemed uncomfortable with it, and I think I think that's editing, because he goes, maybe. Let's cuddle. And he kind of lays down. He, oh, yeah, this is nice. This is spooning. And then you immediately get up and you're like, well, okay.
It's true. I think I did immediately get up. But because I was like, well, we can't just like spoon, obviously. They're not going to like.
Yeah.
I was very aware of the fact that the show itself needed to continue on. Do you know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
I was very aware of the fact that the producers would want us to have conversation about real things. So when he was spooning me, or in any situation where the conversation kind of stopped, I knew that I needed to kind of take the initiative to like continue it on.
Yeah.
Because they needed you to have real conversation.
A narrative has to exist.
Yes. And you couldn't talk about stuff that couldn't be aired. I was very aware of that. Like, we couldn't be like, oh, what did you have for breakfast this morning at the hotel? That was never going to be aired. And I knew that we only had so much time and we needed to like.
That must be awkward. Those are the questions I ask on dates. I go, well, you know, what time did
you
wake up
this
morning?
Like, yeah, we had to like get into more substantial shit like pretty quickly. And I was I was very aware of that. So I kind of felt this responsibility to keep things on track. And that might have been that situation. I'm not sure.
Sure. I just wrote down his kissing is a bit intense. You could put Brad Pitt and Angelina Jolie, some of the most beautiful people ever, have them make out, and I wouldn't really want to watch it.
I understand.
It's nice to do, but it's not... But
especially a prolonged shot of it. Like, yeah, obviously we're going to be making out on this show, but do people want to see... Like more than a couple seconds, you know.
Yeah,
it just it, really, and music is playing, and you're like, "This is something I'm supposed to sit here and just consume."
So, the second group date comes up, and it's pretty much assumed that it's going to be a sports date. I had no idea that, for whatever reason, I had no idea that Notre Dame was in the college was in Montreal. No clue.
Mm.
And you say. You like football because you get to see their butts. Do you actually think that?
That's one thing. Okay. I definitely have gone to a couple football games and I like their bums. But I still have that jersey, you know. I still have the jersey that says Bachelorette on the back.
That's very from cool. From them. I love mm-hmm. that. You should post that on the podcast page. That's pretty fantastic. Anyways, there's a scene. All the guys are kind of, you know, doing the normal stuff. Kevin's teaching Chris how to play, to put on the pads and how to put everything on and making sure he knows the rules. And people are generally doing that sort of thing. And then Drew's off to the side doing his own dicky thing in which he is, there's a scene where it's a frontal shot of him and he's smearing black liner on his face and he goes, I'm going to, and he's like, I'm going to get Chris. Oh yeah. Like he's just, oh, I swear to God, he wants to fuck Chris. And here's some quotes. Just a single quote from Drew. He says, Chris is stupid. He's never played sports before.
Because that makes a person stupid, I guess.
Exactly. It's like, what the hell are you talking about? I think it would be the other way around in which people would falsely assume that people that play sports are dumb. It was just such a crazy thing to say. Once they all have all their equipment on, I also don't get this in football when someone can see, they watch, you know, there's 40 guys on the field or whatever the fuck's going. I think it's 11 on 11 or I don't know how many people play football at a time, but people are able to identify players through like when they have all their equipment on. You can't see their face at all. There's no way unless they do a close up. So when they're playing the sport, I have no idea who anyone is. I can't
I know,
tell.
I completely was like tuned out even being there. Like I was exactly. standing on the sidelines and I was like, first of all, I tune out watching any sports because just like you described there, I don't know who the fuck is who. It's like when you're reading a book and sometimes you trail off in your own and thoughts you and you don't even know what just happened. Yeah, that's
but
what
you're
happens
actively
to me when
reading.
I'm,
it's crazy.
Yeah. That's what happens to me when I'm watching sports and that's what happened to me that time. And I remember there being moments where the producers were like, can you like be more excited? So I would be like, woo! But like, I was like, I don't fucking know. Like until it was over, I didn't know who won. There were moments where I saw them getting slammed to the ground and I would have a reaction, but like, I had no idea what the hell was happening.
The only person I can identify on the field is Kyle 6'7 for obvious reasons. He's fucking massive. There's also a few scenes in which Drew will do something on the field or whatever, and then you kind of like have a little thing with them. You kind of have a little back and forth, and I'm like,
recall.
I do not like you connecting with Drew. And stop. I hate it so much. Every time I'm like, Kyle is, again, I just love Kyle so much. I knew he wasn't going to be a front runner. It just didn't seem like there was much of a connection there. But Kyle, he's so sweet. He's like the nicest guy ever. So mm-hmm. kind. He's just a good sport about everything. Anyway, fucking Chris gets a touchdown or something. Drew is pissed. There's a scene, and because I have subtitles on, they include everything, even things you can't really hear. And Drew says, he just goes, Chris. And again, one team wins and they're all hella pumped because like, yeah, we're going to go on this like smaller group date. And you go, you guys all played so well. Let's all go on the date. And again, they're all just, fuck. Like they're so pissed that They're like, why did we even do this? What is the point? We could have come out here, threw the football around. Fucking Kevin, like, broke his ankle.
I know.
Going for it. And then you're like, yeah, go fuck yourself. We're all going on the date. I was just, oh my God. It's so funny every time you do that. I look forward to it every time. Because now I know it's a thing that you don't have control over. Because the producer's everyone's going on this date.
Either the producers gave me the option or they were like, you should do this or whatever. I'm not sure. I can't recall. But I definitely know that, like, I always look to them for their suggestions. Like, what do I do? You know?
Anyway, good. The date continues onto La Musique or whatever it's called, some kind of facility, a bar or something. And Chris has a little side interview before the date really commences. And he goes, tonight's the night. I have to tell Jasmine what's going on with Drew and who he really is. And I'm like, oh boy. And at first I was like, yeah, this is the right thing to do.
Well, if you've watched the show, which I know you haven't, Cole, you will know that this never ends well, but
100%. And
I did appreciate Chris doing this.
Of course.
Unlike maybe other Bachelorette bachelors might be like, oh, I don't appreciate that quality in them that they would rat someone out. I was like, thank you. And I have more to disclose about this. But
I'm excited to get
you give me.
So Chris gets to sit down with you and he just drops all the bombs and explains it. And while he was telling you, I was thinking, okay, I agree with him telling her. And then I thought about it and I actually think, no, you don't.
Here's the thing though, Cole, like imagine this, I understand your perspective there and like a lot of people will share that it's like, okay, don't go to her, just talk to them man to man, whatever. But if the person really cares about you, like let's say, you know, Chris actually gave a shit about me and wanted me to not be with an asshole. He might want to make sure that I'm aware that this person is not who I think. And so sure. I did appreciate that about him. I understand that was his angle. Yes, he could have confronted Drew directly, but I don't think at this point he was really like concerned with himself. He was more concerned with what I knew and didn't know.
Sure.
And he wanted me to know the truth. And at the time, I had an inkling, but I wasn't really aware.
Drew explains himself and says, hey, it's kind of a dumb joke. It was in bad taste, and walks right out of it. Then Drew comes back and he's like, you're a little bitch, bro. Because he immediately knows it's Chris. Mm-hmm. They have this interaction. And Kevin agrees with Drew. And he's like, yeah, he shouldn't have done that.
But let me just give you a little bit of insight that, again, has ever heard. So after that conversation with Chris, after that conversation with Drew, I went to the bathroom. It was pretty much done. Like, the whole thing was over. I was pretty annoyed. I knew that Drew was a bit of a snake. Like, I already had that inkling. It's not like it was a huge surprise to me. But, of course, I was not there to see him be an asshole to anyone.
Sure.
Especially Chris. But here's the thing. I went to the bathroom in this bar, and I was in there. And while I was in there, I heard him yelling at Chris and calling him a little bitch and all the stuff that was, it was featured. You can see it on camera.
Yeah, well, I remember.
But there was more. There was more. And I could hear it. And I was in the bathroom. I was with one of the producers. And I was like,
in the bathroom together?
Well, I went pee and I was like washing my hands or whatever. Like, I was in there. Sure. And it was like stuff was happening. So I wasn't allowed to go out yet.
Yep.
And I was like, I want to go and confront him right now.
Yeah.
And they were like, I don't think you should. And so I didn't. I like had to hold back as much as I wanted to go out there and like rip into Drew and be like, don't you dare talk to Chris like that. I didn't. I don't remember specifically like what kept me back, except for just being advised not to intervene.
Wow.
But no one knows. I've never talked about that either. That was the thing that was like, I was very much aware of
that shit happening. Anyway. So they're all back at the hotel after this, and Chris is essentially explaining what happened. Drew's in the fucking room, too. It's crazy awkward. And all the guys are like, wow, okay, you just kind of made waves for all of us, and now we all have to sit with the repercussions of that. And as soon as they say that, Gnome Cap comes in, and Gnome comes in, and it's funny that I call him Gnome because he's like 7'4". He's so tall. He has to shrug through a door. He really has. He's like Hagrid. You guys fucking massive. And he comes in and he goes, you know, the cocktail party is canceled. Jasmine needs some more time to think. And I was like, oh, fuck. Chris must feel like shit right now. And all the guys are just looking at him like, you motherfucker. Because you just ruined the chances of any of these guys that didn't get any one-on-one time with you to have one-on-one time with you. It's brutal.
Side note, sometimes it was just because we took too long to record things and didn't have enough time in the day, so didn't have time for a cocktail party, and they would just make it seem like I canceled it. But I don't remember if that was the situation here.
So Drew says, I don't think she wants to be with someone who throws someone else under the gutter, which is not a saying. He's mixing.
And not possible.
He's mixing two kind of different sayings together, which is like your mind is in the gutter and under the bus.
Yeah.
And it's funny that he says that because that's exactly what this guy's been doing the entire time to everyone else, just not in front of you. Your dress for the rose removal ceremony is on motherfucking fleek. You look like Cleopatra.
Oh, was it the one with the gold?
Yeah, it was the gold bands down the center of your bust, and it was just fucking dope.
The center of my bust. I don't know.
I was like, what is that? Like your sternum. It was just.
I do remember that was the dress that was used. That was the dress in like promo photos.
Yeah. Anyway, you get a little bit of one-on-one time before the rose ceremony, weirdly enough. So it's kind of a mocktail party.
Oh my god, wait. Yeah, I need to also confess that I got quite intoxicated at this cocktail party. Slash, remember how I said that I drank before every rose ceremony because I was so nervous? This happened in this situation big time. I remember being very nervous for this one. And I remember learning that a couple of the men snuck out of the hotel. Benoit being one of them. We've had this conversation actually recently, like within the last month. They did. I don't know. They like sweet talked the hotel. Because here's the thing. We were not given keys. Like I never had a key to my hotel room the whole entire 2 months. Because if I had a key, that means
could the producers, yeah.
Well, yeah. Like, well, that would mean that I could leave and I could return. Like, no.
Yeah.
So same for the guys. But Benoit was in Montreal. Like he was super homesick. He didn't speak English that well. His restaurant was down the street. He just couldn't stop himself. So he and some of the guys, and I can't recall exactly the group, they snuck out and they went to his restaurant and they got blitzed and they went out like all night long in Montreal, and then they came back and I had heard about it somehow. I don't remember how I heard about it, and I confronted Benoit like after this rose ceremony, and I was like, you went out, how dare you, you know, like I'm taking this process seriously. I was like so I was so outraged that he did that. And looking back, I'm like, wow, like I really was. I was like deep in the process and it was hard for me to imagine that someone else would like defy the rules.
Yeah.
But it was very funny. Anyways, we've talked about it recently. I just saw him not that long ago and he was like, yeah, like I snuck back. Like when I got back, everyone was in there. I was just walking with my head hung low. Like it was, they were out all night long.
That's so funny.
Bad boys.
I love that.
Bad boys.
Anyway, so you get a little bit of one-on-one time with each guy, although it's kind of a mocktail party, and you pull Mike aside, and he is now known as 8-Pack Mike.
Oh, yeah, right.
He is
I've,
fucking
I've, like, really
shredded.
Objectified him.
Yeah, it was a little uncomfortable the way... Because he was everyone. A little... Mike is so nice that you had to ask him, like, 4 or 5 times, and he was like, okay... And he like took his shirt off and he's like, yeah, I'm shredded. And you were like, oh. And then I swear to God, either or the producers were like, you have to walk back over to the rest of the guys and he has to have his shirt unbuttoned. Because he walked back over and Kevin was like, motherfucker.
Yeah, it was very uncomfortable.
Rough to that. You grab Drew to talk during the ceremony. Fucking crazy. Mm-hmm. And he... again is kind of a master manipulator because he sides with you, which is a complete manipulation tactic. If you are in deep shit, you know you're in trouble, you know your everything is on the line, well, all you do is agree with the other person and go, it's your call, I 100% agree, I did the wrong thing, and you side with them because that's what someone who actually feels bad would do. Whether you mean it or not, you have to do that. And he does it to a T. And you say, well, I don't know what to do. And he was like, you have to make the right decision. If you don't want me to be here, you don't want me to be here. And I went for a second, I go, wow, a moment of humility. And then I go, nope, nope, that guy just bullshitted that. There's no way he actually felt that way. Mm-hmm. Chris gets brought in. He gets a rose. And then Drew gets a rose. And I was like, oh my God, I cannot wait for the next episode of this because it's just going to continue. And Kyle67 is my favorite to be eliminated. And he has this great little interaction because, again, he's just such a nice sport. He was just like, all right. He gives you a hug and he's like, I wish you all the best. Hope you find love. And then he's walking and goes, you know, it's actually kind of a blessing that, you know, I'm being sent home. I've got two cats that really miss me.
Aww.
What a sweetheart. That's so funny.
We gotta get Kyle on here.
I would love to get Kyle on here. That guy has just a great point of view. I feel like I could learn a lot from him. But that is the gist for episode 4, the first episode in Montreal. Please leave us a 5-star review, leave a comment, DM the page, DM Jasmine. So thank you guys so much for coming on and listening. This is so fun for us. We have a really good time doing it. And thank you so much for listening.
Love you. Bye.
Subscribe.